sleep. What a surprise. Let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you. So let's go kick some.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this month by our fabulous friends at the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe, thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and find us on Spotify. Tonight, we're catching up with the team from Harlequin's You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Author Dave Andrews chats to us about his latest book, Time and Time Again, plus Rebecca and Bridie are in to chat about a number of comedy events coming up before Christmas. But to kick off the show, a few weeks ago, we interviewed the fabulous Kiwi group Borderline, taking the music world by storm. So here's their latest track, Terrify.
Doing just fine on my own. You just ain't no ordinary girl. You're everything right, but too wrong, and you know that everyone revolves around you. But I'm never enough to you.
Borderline with Terrify. Man, they're doing so well so fast, Emma.
And as you said too, you got a bit of a shock when you saw that music video.
I know. Not only are the Borderline past students of ours, but so is the person in the entire video, who I didn't know had any connection with them. So that's quite funny.
It is quite interesting when you see the little connections between music groups and, you know, it's like theatre. Everyone knows everyone.
I know. Everyone does. Now, what have you been up to this week?
I'm cleaning.
I love that that became a social media postings for the week. We all got to see Emma cleaning.
Yeah. Well, I just thought that people... It was actually more to hold myself accountable.
Yeah.
That I decided to tell everyone that I'd started my spring deep clean at home.
Excellent. And have you got a home to go back to tonight, or is it just like devastation everywhere?
There's half devastation. There is a section of the house that is looking absolutely spotless. And then there's a half that looks like everything's just been put in doom piles that I'll slowly now, over the next week, start sorting out.
Okay, now be honest to our listeners. This is a live radio show. How many individual socks did you find in your cleanup?
So there were 3.5 bags of unpaired socks behind the couch. and we washed them all. And my husband and I sat down, and I now have 30 pairs of paired socks. There is still a whole table of unpaired socks. My husband has a bag, I have a bag, and my son has a bag. So probably we found about 100 pairs. And we probably still have about 200 unpaired socks.
Now, if you know Emma, you know she's one of the most busiest people in the theatre world. So
it's just easier to buy new socks than find the pair.
Well, I just have visions of you coming home and just like things get thrown everywhere in the
pretty
chaos
much.
As you're running in between things.
Yeah, that's pretty much. But I did go to Legally Blonde this week.
Oh, brilliant. At the MPA, you enjoyed it?
I did. I went to Alt Night.
Ah, great.
So it was really neat to see Katie and Keith strutting their stuff. And yeah, it was so much talent in that show. So good.
Brilliant. Well, I headed to Life on a Loop at Q Theatre. We interviewed Jessie Peach a few weeks ago with the fabulous Ali Smith. What a night. Incredibly performed. One woman show playing all the roles, and it just brought back such good memories seeing Ali on stage again, because she was someone I grew up watching.
Isn't it 13 years since she's been home or something?
15,
it's something ridiculous. Yeah.
So well done, Jessie and team. They've wrapped today. I know tickets got hard to get, so hopefully that's a good thing for them. And I checked out Company Theatre's The Cemetery Club, which was, you know, a really good play, well acted by the team over at the Belmont Rose Centre.
Fantastic.
Now, our next guest in the studio tonight, you and I are checking out over the next couple of weeks as well. We have got our tickets.
Going to be exciting.
So we have the team from Harlequin Theatre with You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Good evening, team. Welcome.
Kia ora.
Thank you for having us.
Great to have you. And we've got Amelia, who is the director.
Welcome. Hello.
And I believe, Jordan, you are playing Charlie Brown
That's
himself.
That's correct, yes.
Can I ask, has the hair dye been for the role?
It has indeed.
Okay.
The goal is that this blonde understage lighting just blends into my scalp and I look completely bald.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
He surprised us with it this morning. He walked in and I was like, oh my God, it happened.
It's good. It looks good.
It looks really good. Yeah. And it looks good under the stage lights too.
Yeah. I mean, it looks professionally done, not exit mould or anything like that.
Oh, it probably needs another couple of tones over the week, but she'll be right.
Brilliant. And Oliver, you are the famous dog of Snoopy.
That's right, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, great to have you here. Amelia, kick it off, first of all. Is this the classic tale we all know?
Oh, of course, of course. This is the tale of Charlie Brown and the Peanuts Gang. There are like original songs that have been written, and I didn't know that that's what the musical was comprised of until I did a lot more research when I was interested in putting it on. But they're all from like the comics way back, and they've taken some of those original songs and they have molded them together to create a show. And it's just lots of little vignettes of moments and like little iconic scenes that we like all know and love from the Peanuts comics, and it's been stitched together to create a little 2-hour musical.
Why was it called Peanuts?
The creator, Charles M. Schulz, didn't actually like the name Peanuts. He wanted to call it
cashews.
Different types of nuts. No, he wanted to just call it Charlie Brown and Friends originally, and then the people who were producing the comic went, nah, that's not going to catch on. One dude, I cannot remember what his name was, but he just wrote down Peanuts on a piece of paper and just handed it to the publisher and was like, just call it that. This is not going to sell. This is back in 1950 when he was starting to get a little bit more recognition and get like the weekly comic and stuff, and that producer just was like, yeah, just call it Peanuts and we'll see what happens. And now it's stuck, and it's quite infamous for being called Peanuts.
Do you know, when I was a kid, my dad was the manager of Gordon and Gotch, which is a book and magazine publishing company, and I was like under 10, and every Friday he would arrive home and I would wait for him to pull in the drive, and he would get out and he'd have a brown envelope, and in that brown envelope was whatever cartoons got released in magazines that week, and it was often Charlie Brown ones. Oh,
see,
it was such a highlight.
We had the little square Snoopy Peanuts books had like a cover. They had a paper cover on them. And they were quite random, like the covers were like bright orange and bright red with kind of like peanuts written in a circle around them. But I remember I loved them and they were quite often bedtime reading for us.
We're showing our age because these three probably haven't even had a comic.
This is what I love about the show. So it's really special this year because it's 75 years of the comic. Yeah, so it's quite an iconic time to be putting it on. But it's such a nostalgic musical for so many reasons. And people like Gen Zers, anybody has got like a connection to Snoopy or the Peanuts characters, and that all brings up memories. And that's what the show's rooted in, is childhood joy and childhood wonderment. And that's it. It's just like play on stage, and it's been so beautiful to craft. But I think that's what's so awesome about the show, and what's so special about producing it during the 75 years, is that everyone's got a story connected to it. And when you come in, you're like, oh, I'm so excited, I get to watch these characters on stage. And it's reminding me of getting those little envelope on a Friday, and like your books, and that takes you back to your childhood, which I think is a really beautiful thing that this show can do.
Brilliant. And how many in your cast in total?
There's 13 altogether.
Okay, cool. All right, so Jordan, the pressure, playing Charlie Brown himself.
Sure.
How have you developed the character? Like, have you done this sort of research? Have you pulled out the comic books?
It's a great question. I actually did purchase, I think, one of those small square versions that Emma was talking about beforehand. It's a great question. It's involved looking at old animations, right? I think capturing that youth-like movement that Charlie Brown and his fellow characters bring has been really interesting. It's something that you don't think about when you grow up, you start walking as you do. You don't think about the physicality when you're trying to bring what youth and how youth move and walk to the stage. So it's been quite fun to like really crack into that, and it's very animated, you know. Maybe the voice goes into the higher register. But yeah, it's been a fun, exciting challenge, I guess, taking on this role.
Is the little redhead in the musical?
She is not, no.
Do you talk about her, though? Have you got the scenes
heavily,
talking
about? Heavily referenced, yeah. But never seen.
Is the peanut butter, lunchtime peanut butter monologue in the musical?
You'll have to wait and see.
It's one of my favourite. I like that music. I like that monologue. It's quite cool.
Okay, and your mate Snoopy, how's he going?
Yeah, very well. Well, at least I hope. I hope people really, really enjoy it. But no, it's been really great. Arguably, an even more iconic character than Charlie Brown. And trying to bring him to life. No offense, Jordan. It's been quite a process. Sort of deciphering all of the little. It's a lot of little pieces and little bits that I come out and do, and figuring out the right way to do all those in a way that feels authentic to the character. And getting a lot of those sort of, it is quite animated in the way that you should be played. And there's a little, you know, Red Baron moment in there, which I'm sure people are hoping and expecting. But it's been a lot of fun. He is such a fun character to play, and just really, and I mean that, like, play with it. It's been a really good time.
And you're known for theatre for your physicality. You love being physical all over a stage. Are you getting to do that with Snoopy as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. Lots of moments on all fours and that sort of thing. And the big dance numbers and a couple of tumbles in there as well. I'm sure people are expecting me to do that. Another very physical role for me to sink my teeth into. Canines into.
Is Woodstock in the show?
Yes, but probably not in the way that you'd think.
Cool. Right. And how is Charlie getting on with Sally?
Do you know what? They have a lovely relationship. Sally is apprehensive of, I guess, Charlie's maybe value in the family structure. But I think she cares for him in the end. But she's the boss, you know. She tells him what to do. Yeah.
Brilliant. What's it been like directing this one, Amelia?
Oh, it's just been amazing. You know, I sat back the other day and like really like took it all in from the props team to the set team to the cast. Like, the set team have just been incredible. And like, I was sharing to some people, I was like, a couple years ago, I was like, yeah, I want to do the Charlie Brown musical and like put that on stage. And I did a little drawing of like how I would like the set pieces to look and how that would look on the stage. And I like took that moment to sit back and be like, yeah, that like drawing that I did like 2 years ago is like literally in front of me right now, in this like amazing team of people who have literally just taken all of my ideas, even to I love Colin. I sat him down after the run today and I was like, can we move the clouds? I know that's a really hard job, but can we move them again? And he was like, yep, on it straight away.
Nice.
And yeah, just everybody like has been so efficient, and it's just been amazing to see all of that just come to life. And the cast have been amazing. They've been sponges from day one. I've been getting them to do the most silly things and to just like let their ego get out of the building, because we're playing children. We're playing 8-year-olds and 5-year-olds, and so there's no ego involved in that, and so we have to like strip it down and just get silly with everybody and just enjoy being in that state. And they've just been sponges, and they've soaked it all up, and they've really just brought these characters to life. And yeah, it's crazy because we're now going into Tech Week, so we've been doing this for a few months now, and yeah, and then I have to hand my baby off in a couple of days.
But it's lovely hearing your comment about the clouds, because that means you've got a team that respects your vision, and actually their job is to help make that come to life. So I love hearing that, because it's not always the case.
Yeah.
So that's really, really good, especially when you are handing your baby over. You know, that's really important.
Yeah, and to know that vision's going to continue throughout all of the shows. I'm so excited that in a week's time people will be watching the show. They're so ready for an audience now. We've just been running it for a couple of weeks because the cast have been sponges.
Great.
And have just taken everything on, and it's now all the little tweaks, and then they bring it to the next run, and it's just like it just keeps going up and up and up.
That's
and
a really good position to be in.
I'm very proud of the position that we're in right now, feeling very confident.
All right, we've got the song to play, Beethoven Day. All right, Oliver, tell us about it. What's this track all about?
Oh, this
what
is
moment
character.
Does this come in?
It's the character Schroeder's sort of main big grand song. He's a piano player. He's obsessed with classical music and Beethoven, and it just so happens to be Beethoven's birthday. And so this is a song about Beethoven's birthday and how we could possibly be celebrating it.
All right, let's enjoy.
Yeah.
Principal and hand him the news. We've got a holiday that he can't refuse. A day of harmony, a day of music. Beethoven's birthday.
Beethoven Day.
A reverential mission.
Beethoven Day.
The hope of each musician. No more am I the only guy to stand up and say, hooray, Beethoven, hooray.
Beethoven Day.
Yes, as in Ludwig von Beethoven, composer. Born 1770, died 1827. The eldest of three sons, Ludwig's mother was the daughter of the chief overseer of the kitchen.
Whatever. Schroeder, I just want you to know I'm on your side. I want to help you publicity-wise with Beethoven's birthday.
Thanks for your support, but I just don't want to see Beethoven's birthday commercialized.
Commercialized?
Yes, the next thing you know, they'll be wearing Beethoven sweatshirts.
Beethoven Day.
If you're wondering now, how do we start? Just blow the music till you know it by heart. We're gonna celebrate, we'll throw a party. Beethoven's birthday.
Beethoven Day.
And when you say the title,
Beethoven Day,
you'll hear a great recital. All right, of every boy and girl to stand up and say, hooray, Beethoven, hooray. Beethoven Day.
Beethoven Day.
Beethoven Day.
Beethoven Day.
Beethoven Day.
Beethoven Day.
A philharmonic rumble. A polyphonic jumble. A humble dedication as we stand up and say,
hooray, Beethoven, hooray.
Page ads in every newspaper.
We'll start a chain of Beethoven superstores.
We'll build a Beethoven theme park.
We could have a bake sale.
Wait, that's too commercial.
Let's imagine it, that glorious hour, filled with emotion, yet inspired with power. When we all honor the man we are. On the day we place the newest face on Mount Rushmore.
Mount Rushmore.
Beethoven
Day.
A moment of reflection.
Beethoven Day.
A classical injection. So face in this direction. We begin it today.
Beethoven Day.
A musical collection. Everybody can play. The light of every boy. Stand up and say, hooray,
Beethoven.
Beethoven.
was it not to sing along, guys?
Oh, it's so catchy.
Yeah, it's a great song.
I was dancing in my seat.
Favorite song on the show?
Well, Supper Time, but I'm biased. That's my song.
Okay, yeah, all right. Favorite?
I mean, it is Beethoven Day.
Yeah?
And I've said that 100 times. I'm not just saying it now.
Okay, is the director allowed to have a favorite?
Yeah, I have Little Known Facts as mine.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, look, let's talk a little bit about your own journey in the arts now for a bit. So, Oliver, take us back. When did it first sort of kick off for you? Was it at school?
Yeah, I'd say it was at school. I did performing arts in high school, and then did the school shows, obviously. And they were all pretty good. But then in year 13, I got to do Chicago, which was probably the where it all started. I got to play Billy Flynn on stage. Still, to this day, one of the best things I've ever done, I think. Which is crazy to say, because it was a high school show. And then a few years later, I was asked to direct a production of Annie, which went pretty good. And then, ever since, that got me sort of back into acting, and done a fair few shows now.
Apart from this one, because that would be unfair, do you have a favorite one that sits there that you, for some reason, always sort of tugs at the heart for more than others?
Apart from this one, that's tricky. Let's go Evil Dead. I'd say mm-hmm. Evil Dead last year was so much fun.
Yeah. You love that one. That was very obvious. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Jordan? Take us back. When did you first kick off into the art scene?
So, in truth, yes. It's not too much of a throwback.
Okay.
I started doing more backstage, set painting kind of thing.
And a famous chicken, a famous cow.
Exactly. well, Into the Woods, yes. Yeah. And a year ago, my partner Raquel was cast as Gabriella in a high school musical. The director was very keen for some more male ensemble. So I thought, oh, why not? You know, I grew up loving high school musical. So I got roped in there, ended up as Chad understudy and got a couple shows as Chad. Just had the best time. And then did Mary Poppins after that, and now Charlie Brown. So, yeah, third show, just 12 months, really.
So nothing in your school days?
I mean, I was the car salesman in Wind of the Willows when I was about 8. Pretty sure they made that role to fill in more kids. You know? Don't think that was in the original.
It's a show I haven't seen for a very long time.
Yeah, that's true.
That was back in my teenage days. I wonder what's happened now, the poor old badger and mole. Okay, so a little bit of school
just
to kick
hint,
it off.
Yeah, there's a big gap, but loving it.
So now you've got the bug, no going 100%, back?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
And I suppose it's cool too, because you can be on stage and still be sharing your incredible art expertise.
Yeah, it's fun. It's always a nice vibe getting in there in a productive space. You got a set painting night, and I used to be in that space, but I joined sort of later in the process, and you know, there was a cast who'd gone to know each other, and I was coming in later. It's so cool being a part of it from day one, and getting to know everyone in the cast, the creatives, and yeah, just being a part of it, you know.
Very cool, very cool. All right, Amelia, take us back. What first kicked it off for you? Was it on stage, behind the scenes?
Well, my first musical was when I was 13, and it was in at school. It was the high school production of Beauty and the Beast. I was year 9, and I came in bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was a very happy ensemble member. And then they found out that I'd been classically trained in singing at that point, so they then found out that they had the year 9 who could hit all of the high notes.
Wow.
So they got very, very excited. So I was backstage singing almost every single song, being just like, what? Wailing in the background. So that was a lot of fun. And then I started getting the bug for writing and directing when I was 16. If we did not have high school arts, I think that paves the way in so many artists' careers. So we got a shout out
to
the high school.
Are you listening, political people?
Yes. Yeah. Fund the arts, please, because if I didn't have a high school teacher who recognized that I had a passion for this, and she offered me the school show when I was in year 12, and she was like, look, you've given me the script. Do you want to put it on as the school show? Like, do you want to direct it? And I was like, oh my gosh. And so I did that at 16, which was very exciting. And it's really special to be back at Harlequin, because I'm coming full circle because I did that original high school show that I directed, and then I did Carrie at AMT, and then at the end of that year, I did the Harlequin intern program, where I wrote and co-directed Bloom, which was an original, and so doing that at 16, and that was the only creative space that I was in at Harlequin, and now to be back working for them as well is it's quite a nice full circle moment to be back there, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, since then I've been on the creative team for more shows than I have been in shows now. But yeah, I'm hoping next year I get to audition for a few shows and get to sing again because I love to sing, which the cast will know because every time I block something, I'm like, let me sing. But yeah, so yeah.
Where did you learn your classical training, singing training?
I started out in choirs. Yeah, so it's actually such a cute little story. So my grandparents met when they were cast in now the show has gone out of my mind, I was about to say Cabaret. It's not Cabaret. Oh my gosh, it's Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Carousel,
thank you so much. They were cast as like the main two, like romantic leads, and so that's how they met. And then musicals have just kind of been in my family ever since, and that was in the UK, and that was on a national tour, so that was pretty cool. But then, yeah, I got into choirs, and so I sang at the Trinity Cathedral Hall, cathedral, oh my gosh, words, for quite some time. And then Calvin Baker, was trained by Calvin Baker for a bit. And then I had the most wonderful vocal coach, Leah Lamatoa, and so that's how I started, yeah.
Brilliant. Cool. Yeah. All right, here's your tough kick-ass question then. If a producer walked in the door and offered you any role to either direct, so a show to direct for you, or roles for you two to play, what would it be? And even if it's like, just for whatever reason, out of the realm.
Or Oliver, if you wanted to direct, you could direct.
Yeah, today's your day. If you could do it, what is it? What would be the dream role?
Oh, well, if I could do anything, it would be Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men. That role, I love a nice, meaty monologue. I love it. And that is one of the best monologues of all time. That's such an incredible character. That's the one.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine A Few Good Men, the musical.
Yeah, well, there's a play.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a play of it. Yeah.
So I'd love to do that. That's
oh, yeah, I could see you in that. Yep. Okay, I give you the tick of approval. All right, Jordan.
I love, again, new to musical theatre,
yeah, okay.
Right? I love, I've been exposed to it recently, Hadestown.
Oh, yep.
Orpheus. It's such a cool storyline. I kind of grew up loving that, all that Greek mythology stuff. So, it's beautiful music, beautiful characters. So, I think Orpheus, yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Cool. All right, lucky last, what are we directing?
You asked me this last year when I came on to Rent, and my answer hasn't changed.
Okay.
There's a beautiful play that I saw at the Edinburgh Festival, and I have just been itching to put it on because it's such an incredible celebration of like sexuality and just like finding yourself and finding your uniqueness. But it's called 1972, The Future of Sex. And I just want to like have fun doing a devised piece, and hopefully maybe next year might be the year. I've started talking to a production company, so maybe. But if it wasn't that one, I'm really going to cheat and say I want to create another original. I'm itching to get back into writing again, and hopefully put on some, maybe a one-woman show. Who knows? Being pretty ambitious there, but I think that's something I want to do next.
No, so, that's cool. Yeah. All right. We'll hold you to that. Okay. Can't come in for a third time.
I'll come on for kick-ups when I put it on. Yeah.
Jordan, what would you say to people listening that are in the background or in the ensemble going, just too nervous to sort of audition for that role? And, you know, you've taken that leap of faith, so to speak, and jumped all the way to Charlie Brown. What do you say to that person in the background?
I think, you know, from my experience, it is go and aim high. Like, I just put Charlie Brown on my audition form. There's nothing else to it. I thought, why not? I was kind of encouraged to. I was told maybe there was some look that I might have, and I thought, I'll just chuck it on there. You know, why not? And it's it's brought about this amazing experience. So I think it's important in the audition process to aim for that. Even if you're not selected as that lead, your name is in that area. It's fresh in the mind of the creatives, right, who are considering who they want to be a part of the team. And yeah, I think it's important to put your name down as opposed to just chucking ensemble in there or anything like that.
Yeah. I like that on an audition form when people do tick everything. Mm. And then it's like, you know, you're open, but it also says I'm not just punching high for a lead, but I love it because I love it when you audition somebody and they don't realise how good they are.
Yeah.
And they've only ticked on someone, you're like, no, I'm ticking this for you. Yeah. You must get that with your junior festivals as well.
Yeah.
The amount of talent that comes through that volume.
They sure do. Yeah.
All right, Amelia, the Kick Arts microphone. Emma's coming to opening night. She's going to plant it somewhere hidden for the entire season. It's going to record every audience comment as they come and go. One day someone will find it. What do you hope the audience say?
I think, like, to put us back to the start of the interview, but I would love to just sit in the foyer and hear people talking about their memories of Charlie Brown and what it took them back to, and that theatre doesn't need to be heavy, and just enjoying like a little escape, and it's not serious because the show is not serious. It's goofy and it's fun, and like it really is just like a fun celebration on stage. And so I hope people just allow themselves to sink into what their inner child would think of this musical, and just enjoy sitting in that space.
Nice, I like that. Any plans for 2026?
Ooh,
show-wise or otherwise? It's that end of the year we get to ask these questions.
Well, there's some good ones coming up for sure. Yeah. Lots to pick from. I hear Harlequin's putting on Beauty and the Beast next year. So definitely we'll be looking into that. That's got to be a good one coming up. And, there's so many options.
Although there's still quite a few theatre groups not announcing yet because they're still waiting to get copyright for that second half of the year. Mm. I've chatted to a few recently going, we can't put it out yet because we're still trying to get something sorted.
Yeah.
So a few more to come. Yeah. Okay, so auditioning for Beauty and the Beast?
Potentially,
all right. Jordan, any plans for 2026?
I was going to say Beauty and the Beast.
Okay,
yeah, right. Copy me.
It's going to be a reunion.
Yeah, right. I haven't looked further than that, you know. I don't want to get too ambitious, but yeah, considering that starting the year fresh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Amelia?
Yeah, well, I sit on the committee for AMT, and we're like currently sitting on a little pot of gold. Yeah. And we're very excited to announce, but yeah, we're in that boat of we just got to get the one last show.
Yeah.
It's like there, but we're just waiting on that confirmation. I'm quite excited to announce those shows next year. But yeah, stuff I can't announce yet, but you know,
things in the pipeline.
There are, which is very exciting.
Before we went to air tonight, Oliver, you were talking about coming. You live all the way out in Bethels Beach, heading all the way to Harlequin, which is Howick, so a good hour's drive,
at least. Yeah.
What pulls you there? Is it the role? Is it the club, all of the above? Like, that's a decent amount of driving every week.
Mm, yeah, well, I hadn't done a show with Harlequin before, and I definitely had wanted to. I'd seen a lot of what they'd done. And as well, obviously, Amelia was directing it, who obviously is a brilliant director, and I really wanted to work with her. And then also the brilliant role of Snoopy. How could I pass that up? It's a very me role, the sort of thing that I would play, and another great opportunity to just have a really great time on stage. I mean, yeah, there was no way I was saying no. So, yeah, over an hour's drive. Yeah.
What do you listen to? Is it music? Is it podcasts? Are you practicing lines? What's your drive technique?
Well, usually music. Check on some movie soundtracks, or some jazz or something. Yeah, gets you through it, especially when there's a bit of traffic.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine the drive home, though, after a big rehearsal. That's a long drive.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the dark.
The things we do for theatre.
Wow, says the person that drove backwards and forwards to Tauranga for 3 months.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Yes.
Yeah, it's all worth it, isn't it?
It is, it is. You do it for the... It's the show that pulls you in, yeah, exactly. And the people you're going to work with.
Yeah.
All right, Amelia, it's time for the infomercial. Plug away. Where can people get tickets? When's it on? Where on earth is Harlequin?
Harlequin Musical Theatre is out in Howick, out near Pakaranga. It's not as far as you'd think. It is not as far. They've just built the new extension, which like shaves off about 5 minutes of the commute, so it's even faster now. Very, very exciting. It was exciting for me, for my commute. but we open on Saturday, on the 22nd of November, and we run till the 6th of December. We have three different combinations of cast. So you can see our main cast, you can see our alt cast, which is our alt Charlie, our Lucy, and our Sally. And then we have a very special performance from Mackenzie Alley, and she has a show as Snoopy as well. So that's happening on the 29th. I believe.
The 30th.
It is happening on Sunday the 30th. Yeah, thank you for that one, Jordan.
One less drive, mate. Yeah. One less drive.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be watching. Oh,
she's phenomenal. She's really She's good. Incredible. She's All great. Of our alts are incredible. So there's a couple of different versions of the show that you can see. So if you liked one of them, come along for another one.
Brilliant.
Which is amazing.
Tickets?
But yeah, tickets are available on iTicket. You can get them through the Facebook account and the Instagram. There's links up there. But yeah, if you go to iTicket and search up You're a Good Man Charlie Brown, that's where you can find tickets.
Amazing. And it's up on our page?
It sure is on our events page as well.
Awesome. Head to kickarts.org.nz. Thank you guys for coming in. We'll look forward to coming and seeing it and supporting you all. Have a fabulous season and a fabulous Christmas, and we'll hopefully catch you back next year, perhaps to be talking Beauty and the Beast or whatever surprises AMT has up their sleeve.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming in. Now, Emma, my Facebook feed was full of people going crazy at the AITS Centre last night, including one of our listeners, Margaret Fitzpatrick, a regular listener, who felt a little shamed that she bought a ticket on her own, but she sat in the front row, and it was to...
Cliff Richard.
Cliff Richard. So here is The Young Ones.
Strong, 'cause we may not be the young ones very long. Tomorrow, why wait until tomorrow? 'Cause tomorrow sometimes never comes. So love me. There's a song to be sung, and the best time is to sing it while we're young. Once in every lifetime comes a love like this. Oh, I need you, you need me. Oh, my darling, can't you see? Young dreams should be dreamed together. And a young heart shouldn't be afraid. And someday, when the years have flown, darling, then we'll teach the young ones of our own. In every lifetime comes a love like this. Oh, I need you, you need me. Oh, my darling, can't you see? Your dreams should be dreams together, and the young hearts shouldn't be
Cliff Richard with the Young Ones. Guess how old he is, Emma?
I would say close to 80.
85 touring, and the feedback was amazing from his concert last night.
Coming from the other side of the world to New Zealand too at that age must be, mind you, he would obviously be in business class and be very
well looked after.
Yeah,
no, absolutely fantastic. So well done. Thanks, Margaret, for sending your pictures through. That was hilarious. All right, we're now joined by author Dave Andrews to chat about his latest book, Time and Time Again. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
Great to have you here. So this is your first book, I understand.
It is my first book. It was meant to be written many years ago, but, you know, with work and other commitments in life, you kind of can never quite get around to finishing things off. But, yeah, finally got it done. So it's great.
Now, how much of this is actually based on your own story? You know, you're an ex-police officer and your main character in your book of as a retired SAS officer.
Obviously I was spent 30 plus years on the police in Palmerston North, and you obviously accumulate quite a bit of knowledge just by the fact of doing that particular job. I was in a forensic unit for over 20 years and attended a lot of crime scenes and things like that, so you pick up a little bit of things. But I always say to people, look, this is strictly a fiction book, but there might be a little bit of, you know, stuff which I've dealt with over the years, and all the things that I did when I was a teenager as well. It goes way back, you know, to the 70s as well, that you kind of draw on and turn into fiction. So yeah, it's good.
So does this mean that you retired from the police force, but you've had something to keep you going writing this book?
I kind of retired a year early than I planned to, because I just always wanted to write this book, and I'd actually had a couple of goes over the years, and I've written a lot of short stories and all sorts of things, but I finally decided, right, bite the bullet, time to give up the job and sit down and just write full time, and I haven't looked back. It's been great.
Brilliant. So walk us through, what's the book all about?
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a what they call a cross-genre book. There's a bit of time travel in it. It's a science fiction basis in it, and then there's a little bit of political action thriller, love stories, and a couple of love stories thrown in as well. A little bit of everything, but basically, it's about the ability to travel back in time. There's time caves are discovered, and one is in New Zealand, and the New Zealand government find out about it and approach an SAS officer and ask him to go back and convince his teenage self to come forward, and they want to stop a terror plot which has happened in New Zealand. So it's kind of all that build up to it, and of course, being a typical 17, 18 year old that he's talking to, he suddenly then thinks, well, I can change a whole lot of other things to suit myself as well, and it's all the moral side of that, and, you know, the second chance at love and all sorts of things thrown in. So yeah, it's a bit of everything.
Nice. And you're already writing the sequel?
Yes, just started that. I'm about a third of the way through that, and I'm hoping to get three books out of this particular story, but we'll just see how we go. Yeah.
So do you have, we've asked a few authors over the years of interviewing authors about their routines. What does your routine look like? Do you have a schedule or a routine that you try to stick to with your writing?
Yeah, well, there's better times of the day to actually write. Depends on whether you're on a bit of flow and whether you've got some inspiration each day. I can sometimes sit down and write all day. Generally, a typical day for me would be to get up and take the dog for a walk, and by the time I get home and I've had breakfast, which is, you know, fairly early, then I'll sit down and write for most of the morning, and then give myself the afternoon off, because obviously your brain wears out a bit, and then I sometimes find that I get a bit more inspiration in the evening, and I might actually end up writing 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and that could take me right through to, or occasionally through to 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, but you want to be able to get up and write again the next day. So yeah, but generally it's just try and write as you feel, you know, as you feel inspired, but usually the mornings are the better time for me.
So you don't catch yourself out and about doing doing odd jobs and suddenly go, Oh, I need to. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I mean, quite often, if you're inspired and you're in the middle of a book, you never stop thinking about it. That's what I find. You actually get quite immersed in the story and the characters, and especially when you're, I was about halfway through the book and these characters were taking shape, and, you know, it didn't matter what I was doing. I could be out doing whatever, shopping in town, and you'd suddenly have these flashes of inspiration. So I'd take a little notebook with me wherever I went and, you know, write down whatever I had the idea, or try and get home as quick as I could and get on with the computer and get it all down. So, yeah.
What's been your biggest learning writing your first book? You know, what are you going to take into sort of writing the second that you go, I've learnt the hard way with this one?
I think I learned, one of the biggest things I learned was don't give yourself a word count limit. Don't limit yourself and say, oh, I'm only going to write 120,000 words or 100,000 words. I think you've got to stay true to the story and just write you've got to write the story. And in this case, I started off planning to do 100,000 words. The next thing I was at 120. And I think the final word count ended up at about 163,000, which is getting up into the Stephen King size model, novels, sort of thing. But that's what I learned, is that I just keep writing. You know, I didn't think I was capable of writing that much, but you are. But if you've got the story, you know, it's easy to do. So, yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Where can people get your book or find out more about you?
The book is self-published. It's available on Amazon. So if you go onto the Amazon website and go onto your local one, which I think is the nearest one is in Australia from here, it can be bought anywhere on the Amazon website. There's a Kindle version and a printed version available. I do have some that I've printed that I've been selling privately, but most of those are gone now. So we're just stuck with the online sales. So, it's where to go. Hopefully in the next couple of months I'm looking at getting an Audible version come out, an audio book. We've had a few requests for that, but when that's out, we'll put some advertising out for that. So
fantastic. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for chatting to us tonight, Dave, and we'll look forward to catching up when the sequel comes out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Thanks for the opportunity. It's great to talk to you.
Awesome. All right. Thanks, Dave.
Okay, thank you.
Now, a chance now to look at the bulletins that have come in over the last couple of weeks. And if you've got something coming up, make sure you're emailing us at info@kickarts.org.nz. Emma, what's the first thing in the inbox?
Well, from Black Creatives Aotearoa, an Afro-Kiwi film that expands New Zealand's cinematic landscapes. A new film screening is set to highlight a bold chapter in Aotearoa's cinematic history, showcasing short films from the talented Black creatives living in New Zealand. The collection reflects the rich tapestry of African and Caribbean experiences and creativity within Aotearoa's growing arts scene. So, Obsidian and Scene, Black Films in Aotearoa, is an 18-minute cinematic journey featuring 12 stunning works from New Zealand's most talented Black creatives and allies. From short films and documentaries to music videos and animations, audience can expect a vibrant blend of vivid storytelling and striking visuals. Each piece a testament to the diversity, resilience and brilliance of Black artistry in Aotearoa. Now, you can find out about the special screening, which is part of the first ever Aotearoa Festival of Black Arts, which, of course, we spoke about last week. So find out more at www.afoba.nz. That's afoba.nz. The screening is on the 14th of December at the Capitol Cinemas in Dominion Road at 2 p.m.
Now, Shoreside's Theatre's annual Auckland Shakespeare in the Park returns this summer for the milestone 30th anniversary season. The 2026 programme features two of Bard's most beloved plays, Romeo and Juliet and Much Ado About Nothing, performed in the outside Pump House Theatre Amphitheatre in Takapuna from the 16th of January right through to the 14th of February. For three decades, Shakespeare in the Park has been a highlight of Auckland's summer art calendar, a place where families, friends and theatre lovers can gather under the stars to experience the timeless stories, poetic language, and vivid characters of William Shakespeare. Now, for all the details, head to the Pump House Theatre or to ShoresideTheatre.com, and remember, it's playing right through middle of January to middle of February.
Now, Kaharanga Happy gets festive with FAM, the Kiri Miti edition. So it's Christmas time. FAM standing for Food, Art, Market. And it's happening on the 6th of December from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at K Road. So get along for a full strip celebration combining full, that's the K Road strip. Not a strip. Celebration combining food, art, design, markets and music. All with the creative energy only K Road can deliver. So Pop-Ups will host a huge lineup of local makers and designers for the FAM market. And it's not your traditional Christmas market, it's K Road's version of Christmas. Local, artistic, a bit cheeky and full of character. So get along, like I said, from the 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. happening on K Road on the 6th of December.
Now, this festive season, the Stardome is inviting visitors to escape into the wonders of the cosmos with an expanded program of planetarium films, live events and family-friendly activities. Following a major upgrade to technology, it now offers sharper, more detailed visuals and enhanced 3D imaging. So the Year in Space 2025 returns with the annual recap of the year's biggest space stories, and that is called the Planetarium Films, plus Big Wave, No Room for Error, in an all-new 60-minute documentary. They've got a school holiday program, they've got telescope viewings, they've got special events taking place. There are so many things happening, so head to stardome.org.nz, pop it on your Christmas radar for something to take the family to. Now, if you've got something coming up, book in an interview with us, come on and chat, or email us and we'll pop it up on our bulletins page. That's info@kickarts.org.nz. Time for a music break now while we bring in our next guest to chat all about comedy in the lead up to Christmas. Here is Sam Cullen with his latest track, Better Than Anything.
Sunshine. Oh, she's effortless looking. She's sleeping, but her hair falls just right. And as she pulls the covers under her chin, she rolls over and back again. It's not like her. It's been a long, long weekend. And as she opens her eyes and closes them, she smiles a tiny grin. I caught her eye just then. Better than anything. She pulls the covers under her chin. She rolls over and back again. It's not like her sleeping, but it's been a long, long weekend. And as she opens her eyes and closes them, she smiles a tiny grin. I caught her eyes just then. Yeah.
streaming through the cracks in the windowsill, morning calm. And as it pours itself in for the kill, she touches my face and I feel better when I'm laying here. As she pulls the covers under her chin, she rolls over and back again. It's not like her sleeping, but it's been a long, long weekend. As she opens her eyes and closes them, she smiles a tiny grin. I caught her eyes, she said,
was very calm.
Wasn't it? Nice Sam Cullen number.
Yeah. Love it.
Emma, I
not
didn't,
so calm bursting
well,
into the studio.
I was just going to say, I didn't have a wine before the show tonight. Do you know why?
Why?
You'll have to work it out. There's a guest in here and I didn't have a wine because every time I have, I cannot say the name of their theatre group.
Oh, is that because it's kind of about improv and it's kind of about being poor
and I just go improv rubbish purposely the things I do for you, Rebecca. I did not have a wine before coming in.
So grateful, you're too kind.
Take it away, Emma, what's happening?
Well, the Basement Theatre's gone like on steroids when it comes to Christmas and comedy and all sorts of things, and the two people that are joining us tonight seem to have a lot of fingers in many, many pies. Christmas pies, yeah. Maybe. Ooh. Maybe a Christmas tart.
Spring Ooh. And Christmas.
Spring and Christmas tart.
So across okay. many festive and non-festive comedy shows.
There we go. So we've got Comedy Culture New Zealand and Impoverished.
Well done, nice house. Said.
Which technically, said. I guess, we are both.
Welcome back. Great to have you both here.
Thanks so much for having us.
So what's coming up first? What's the first event?
Well,
is it buffet? Lineup?
No. We have Femmes and Thems all, what's day today? Sunday? So not from all week to come. Tuesday to Saturday from 6:30
p.m. in the Basement. We're doing Femmes and Thems.
So what's the show all about?
Well, Femmes and Thems originally was just a comedy lineup show in Wellington. My friend who was producing it in Wellington didn't have the spoons for that anymore, so we gave it a crack up here, and then they gave us a whole entire week, and we decided to do a different genre of comedy every night.
Mm.
So
not ambitious at all.
Not ambitious at all. A different lineup every night. So Tuesday night, stand-up. That's the original format. Wednesday night, musos.
Only musical comedians. Only musical
pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thursday,
improv.
We love it.
Yeah.
Friday
is storytellers.
Storytellers, which is very cool. kind of a stem of stand-up sometimes, but more of a story-based joke.
Yeah.
And Saturday is a variety show.
Yeah.
Because we love variety.
We love variety.
Brilliant. All at the Basement.
All at the Basement.
Upstairs.
Yeah.
Nice.
And all Femmes and Thems performing.
Yes. That is the key part of the show.
Yeah.
It's women and gender non-conforming comedians from wherever they feel like travelling from.
Brilliant.
To come hang out.
Yeah.
And are you both performing in this or just organising this? Where do you sit in this week?
We are hosting all of the shows except for the music show, because we have a wonderful musical comedian, True Bidette, who's coming up from Christchurch, and they're also going to host the show, so we get to watch the show, which is so exciting.
You never get to watch the show.
You never get to watch the show. And I'm not in any of the lineups, but Bridie is.
I mean, well,
you are
my better half. My drag persona is in our variety show.
Yeah.
But otherwise,
We're just a double.
We usually host.
We just duo hosting.
Yeah. Yeah.
To some mischief.
Brilliant. Okay, so it's the first one to kick off the spring. I call that the spring.
Yes, that's part of the spring.
Part of the spring season.
It does feel like the holiday season, but it is the spring season.
Yeah.
And it's $8. So I've been telling people that's $1 per comedian.
That's a nice way to promote it.
Yeah, I actually think
that's a great way.
Sponsor your local comedians today.
Just $1 per comedian.
Just $1 per comedian.
Yeah.
But next.
Then it's the holiday buffet. Only like 3 weeks later.
The comedy culture holiday buffet.
Which is so cool. It's also like a slightly different comedy show every night. And all of the proceeds from that one we're giving to the Auckland City Mission.
Brilliant.
Because we thought that's a nice thing to do for the holidays. Yeah.
And that's also at the basement?
That's part of the silly season. So they're doing lots of different things.
And different comedians, different nights. How does that work? Could you come back more than once is what I'm angling at.
Yeah. We've got, it's kind of like the best of. So we're doing a show we just found really fun, which is Improv Soup. Improvisers compete for soup.
It's so fun. I host it and I just have all the soup and I award them soup if they do good enough scenes and I give the audience soup. Will also give people the option to donate their soup.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is summer and soup's such a delicious thing to have on a hot night.
Oh,
the
cold soup.
No, what's that cold soup?
Gazpacho.
Sure. And you know what? Improv Soup is a format that we designed earlier in the year when it was also summer.
We took that to the students on O-Week. But then we on the Wednesday, so it's on Wednesday night, we got Can't Think Straight, which was our variety show we did during Pride. All of, like, queer comedians, performers, joyful things.
Yeah.
And then we're doing Femmes and Thems again for the last time for a while on the third night.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. You know, this is that time of the year where people are thinking about office parties and things. And not necessarily the big company ones that, you know, go and book up Sky City or something. But, you know, those smaller groups where you just want to take your team out.
Yeah.
When you're within a company, you want to take your team out.
Yeah.
Go out for a meal and then go and have some comedy that's affordable. It's not going to break the bank. Yeah. But what a great night out, people.
Heaps to do.
All right. And is there something else after that one?
We're at Christmas yet?
No? Yes.
We're so close to Christmas.
We've actually gone past Christmas with this one because the Improverished show, which is our holiday show, is called Choose Your Own Boxing Day Adventure.
Mm.
It's not on Boxing Day, which we did actually find out one of the performers was deeply confused when I was like, yeah, like it's on December 6th, but the theme is Boxing Day. And she was like, wait, what? I was like, did you think we were going to wake up on Boxing Day and go
do a show?
I thought that as well, by the way. Is this Izzy? Izzy was talking about it like the Boxing Day show.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that is.
I absolutely love how keen she was to spend Boxing Day.
I feel,
with
Emma, we've just stepped into one of their meetings. Like, we're in like their team meeting now.
You are. We're in
the team meeting.
Izzy's not coming up on Boxing Day.
I'm not coming on Boxing Day. But yeah, that's going to be so cool because it's the first format that Improverished ever came up with was Choose Your Own Adventure. And we're putting this like holiday spin on it. And I'm performing in it, but Gareth from Improverished is directing it. So it's going to be his first time directing one of our shows. So it's a little cozy little nugget to end the year. It's going to be very cute.
And you know what? It's not our show. But I am in a show directly after that show, which is also improv.
Yeah.
Called The Ruckus.
We just can't get enough.
And I'll say no more.
So is The Ruckus at Basement as well?
Oh, yeah. Directly after the other one.
Yeah. Holy moly, the Basement are going
it's
nuts.
The place. It's the place for some comedy.
It's really cool. It's given people, instead of just the one season, it's given so many people opportunities to get into the Basement. It's really cool.
Because you were saying before we came on air that, you know, in past years, the Basement had like their known Christmas show that used to always have like special guests on different nights and things.
Yeah.
But that was like a month long thing.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like the way that funding's going or not going and the way that like the economy is, it's really hard to gamble that people are going to spend money on one show going for that long.
Yeah. And then I suppose if you have 20 shows in there, you have 20 teams of people promoting the show.
Yeah.
And promoting the season.
Like one big party.
Yeah.
Big party at Basement.
Yeah. We will be barely at home. We'll just be at Basement.
Yeah.
It will be your home.
Yeah. And then collapsing at the end of it, by the sounds of it, just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for Christmas.
Just in time for a wee.
We'll have a little week and then to recover. To it.
How did you two first meet?
We first met at Red Bar doing an open mic night. And after we had both done our set, I looked at Bridie and I said, oh my gosh, did you know we're wearing the same thing? Because we were both wearing jeans and a white t-shirt and a green cardigan. And I was like, to Kate, I think that's a new friend right there. We're wearing the same thing.
I think, and you probably would have done one of your famous lists, which I enjoy, either about like Shrek or Sandra Bullock. I can't remember which one it would have been at the time. But I was like, that's a bit of me. That's a new friend. And I didn't have a Kate to tell that to.
Oh.
So I was just to myself.
Do you often say things to yourself? Is that kind of how you come up with your comedy?
Yeah, I think it is. You've got to sometimes.
Yeah, you do.
Just kind of say it out to the world and hope that whoever it's intended for.
Yes.
Yes, or not.
Mm.
It's just a self-serving podcast.
With so many different things coming up that you're performing in and involved with, how do you prep yourself and, I guess, switch the brain so that you do have the different character, have the different improv, etc. And for an audience member coming to lots of things, it still feels different. What are you doing to look after yourselves in this space?
That's such a good question. Because I'm like,
that's why I'm here. Thank you.
Half the time I'm like, I find it really hard to separate producer brain from performer brain, which I definitely, and that's been a big conversation for me at the moment, is like, hey, we need to focus on our own stuff next year because we put so much into this that we've had no time to sort of polish our own bits and bobs.
But that is often what happens though, eh? Because your producer brain goes blah, 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 and suddenly you're like, and in half an hour, I have to step onto the stage, and I haven't even thought about what I'm going to do on the stage because I'm still worried about the fact of whether the lights are going to be turned on at the right time and whether the tickets have been sold and are there ushers there and are the chips in the... Yeah.
Are the chips in the oven?
That's
an integral part of the process.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. You're like kind of... You've got a really good uplifting energy.
Oh, thanks.
Which keeps me sort of... uplifted, because I can very easily be like, ugh, you know.
How was that again?
Is there something though that you do from an even from an improv base to go, I need to be different to last night? I need to. Is there something as an actor that you're going, I need to make the switch tonight?
Yeah, I think, like, I do improv with a lot of different people, like, every week. Like, I will be at improv rehearsal, like, four times a week with a different group of people.
Right.
So I think my brain gets used to, like, switching mode because, yeah, every group of people will have a slightly different vibe and, like, a slightly different background and, like, things that they have in common. And, like, when everyone brings their own individual performance flavor, then the kind of dish that is created is, like, slightly different. So even if you improv with people in different groups, you know, when the other people are different, you know, like, so I think I get used to switching to the vibe that we are now in. And I feel like I will be, like, pulling different references from my brain. I will be bringing a slightly different, like level of energy or level of physicality or level of, I don't know, even, like, how much I'm looking at other people. I feel like, when you join a new improv group, it can take a while to, like, put all the coding in.
But then once you...
And you've got to build the trust of the people you're working with and know their limits.
Totally.
And
And I think we do put a lot of effort into casting the shows because it's a great joy for us to pull together people who may not have been in a show altogether before, but to be like who would compliment who like who would work together well.
That would be really fun to do stuff with them and we never get the chance. Like, we've got the ownership to do, to like make that happen now.
And you've got this energy and that would work well with this energy. And like, I think it's there's an art to it, and I think when you get it right, then it feels like quite comfortable and easy to be like, we're in this space now. If you've put in the work beforehand. Yeah.
You are very much sort of like the improv ambassador, and you bring people together. Because I only improvise with the same group, with improvised people every week. So, like, I very much don't. The amount of people you improvise with per week is insane to me. But, like, I'm also like, God, I wish I had that in me.
Brilliant. All right, we're going to take a short music break, then we're going to find out the background of when you first started all of this in your life. Our good friends Wears Jai have released yet another track this year. This one is called Better Be.
I've been trying to get by, find that peace of mind, cut off people who don't vibe, cut off people with no drive.
Jay with Better Be.
I just love how much those kids, I think I'm allowed to call them kids, they've grown up so much. You think when they first came in with Smoke Free, and they were like, you know, 16-year-olds, and now they're, 2 years later, 18-year-olds, but they all look so grown up.
And I remember that night so well, because this studio had a technical fault, so we were in a different studio trying to make everything work, and they were so accommodating. We had those lovely two authors who kind of got spellbound by this band singing away in our group. It was such a good night.
They were really cute,
All right, back to the fabulous Rebecca and Bridie. So now take us back, rather than talking shows now, talk about your journey in the arts, in comedy, in improv. Bridie, kick it off. When did you first go, this is something I want to do?
Gosh, like, I think there was never a point where this wasn't something. It's all I have known, and it's all I know, and it's all I continue to know that I can actually do.
But you've branched out though, haven't you?
Oh yeah, I've got a normal job and all that. No, I think, like, my dad, if you ask my parents, they'll say, oh, it was back in the, because my dad managed the Cozy Club, and every year they had an oldies Christmas party, and young Bridie would get up and not face the audience and do Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Aww.
But everybody loved it, and every year I was like, I've got to go and do my song. And then I think I've always just always been a kid who was like, who likes to play pretend. So I just did like speech and drama and stuff, and then just was always a theatre kid through and through. And it just never, it never stopped feeling like the only thing I want to do ever, forever.
Did you think when you thought that this is what I'm going to do forever, that you realised you were going to also become a producer and make this a thing that other people could do?
No. That was never... It was never a... And I was saying this to Rebecca earlier. It's like, we're not necessarily producers by passion. I'm not. It's by necessity. In that, like, someone has to do this stuff. And if we want opportunities and we want to get things done. And I always found when I was younger, I would do some form of producing in that, like... Which is like, oh, I would have murder mystery birthday parties. I would do this for my birthday, which is where I would want everyone to go to this. And it's like, that's producing.
Oh my God, that's so true. Like, if you're the friend that organises the social events, you're kind of the producer of the friend group.
Especially a murder mystery party.
Yeah, that's a lot of admin.
That was my first taste at how much admin something like that can take to pull off.
Like a stay-at-home parent? You're the producer of the household.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Oh.
The household.
Yeah. Everyone's a producer.
Everyone's a producer.
Yeah.
Anyone, Bridie, that you would say sort of inspired you along your journey?
I would say, and Rebecca's going to love this, Rhys Darby played a very integral part in, like, me being like, comedy is funny. Like, because like, I didn't, comedy especially, I always just thought stuff was funny. You know, I watched a lot of Disney Channel. That was very much my upbringing. I was like obsessed with Hannah Montana High School Musical, all that. But Rhys Darby was like a New Zealander. He was like, he started, and actually Taika Waititi, actually, the whole reason I went and studied film, because I didn't think that I was like, oh nah, I don't have what it takes to go to drama school. And so I went to film school. And I hated it. But I was like, I want to make something like Eagle vs. Shark, because that is what I see, that's the funniest thing I've seen come out of New Zealand. Like, that's so different. That's so new. So I think, like, yeah, Rhys Darby and Taika and the, like, sort of coming of this, like, deadpan. Napoleon Dynamite was a big movie for me. Like, deadpan. Is it deadpan?
Yeah.
It is kind of dry, dry humour. It was, like, seeing all of that and being like, oh, that's kind of different. That's kind of fun. If you asked me earlier, I would have said Hilary Duff. Lizzie McGuire.
Hell yeah.
Massive one for young.
But there's an improv show for you. Like, whatever happened to Hannah Montana? Montana, where is she today? Like wouldn't that be, you know?
I would.
Yeah, you could unpack that in an hour and a half,
there's
I tell you.
There's a lot of 30-something-year-olds out there watching.
And all
tonight.
The parents and who grew up with it the background non-stop with teenage daughters.
Dad cried at Hannah Montana one time. I'll say that.
My goodness.
He used to get into it more than I did.
My goodness. I actually saw her recently, I must say, not Hannah Montana.
Miley.
And can I just say, she looks old.
Oh, no! I was going to be like, she looks mad. Oh,
no.
That was a roller coaster. We didn't know what word you were going to say.
Well, she must be...
She's obviously had a lot of work.
Right.
That maybe hasn't gone well.
Oh, well, there we go. You just adding to your story there. Fabulous. Okay. All right, Rebecca, your turn. Take us back. When did it first sort of kick off for you?
Well, I saw Reese starting.
Okay, this all makes sense now.
Oh, no, but for real, like, same as, yeah. Like, I, all of my improv friends were like, I was like, oh my God, you're all doing comedy as well. Like, what is happening? I'm surrounded by people also doing stand-up comedy. And then I reread Reese Darby's autobiography, and I was like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna give it a go. So I enrolled in the comedy school.
Oh my God, this is so much more recent for you than...
Yeah, I've only been doing, like, stand-up stuff for, like, 3 years.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, stand-up didn't come for me until about the same time either.
Yeah.
I think I just... It was just as funny characters. It was the character work.
Mm. For me, it was I got really into the TV show Our Flag Means Death, which made me reread his autobiography, which made me be like, I'm going to do that. Yeah. Because I think I didn't really... Like, other than Reese Darby, there wasn't a lot of stand-up that I liked. Because a lot of it, you look at it, and it's sort of people monologuing about their thoughts and opinions that I don't necessarily feel like I need to know the thoughts and opinions of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is... This may be that we both have ADHD and we just find it hard to listen to someone talking for a long time. But also, I'm just like... Do something. Do a trick.
I think the only one I really do like that monologues about his life, though, and has a way of connecting with the audience is Michael McIntyre.
Michael McIntyre, I absolutely love his intonations and his floppy little hair. I'm like,
he just owns the stage.
Floppy around little Muppet head. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely, it's like those stand-ups that have a really strong stage presence. Who just put a little character or put a little flair to it or gusto.
And I mean, now that I'm in it, you know, and it's not just some of those like maybe big name comedians that I wasn't really vibing with it, and especially like what we do in comedy culture with like we want to have a diverse lineup, we want to have women, we want to have queer people, we want to have like all different people, I'm like, oh, I'm so much more interested in your stand-up because I'm not hearing the same story over and over again.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think once you get more into it and realize there's actually a whole range of comedy out there, then it's like, oh, this is much more exciting than what I thought it was.
That was
originally
the thing I was struggling with first coming up here. I was like, is stand-up really the only comedy they do here? And boy, they seem to try to make it that way. But I'm like, comedy is just laughing. Like,
anything that makes you laugh is comedy.
Anything that makes you laugh is comedy. Yeah. And you go, I'm a comedian. And they go, oh, what's your stand-up? And it's like, oh, I guess I'm not a comedian. So if I make you laugh, what am I?
So talk to us about the comedy school that you went through.
Oh my gosh. Anybody who wants to try doing stand-up should enroll. It's fabulous. It's the New Zealand Comedy School. It's run by a wonderful guy called Neil Thornton in Wellington. And he's got some more different teachers in different cities now. It's like really growing. And it's just fantastic. It'll be like a 6 to 8 week course, and
Saturday, Sunday for a few hours.
Yeah, and he'll teach you like how to write jokes and like how to structure your set and work some people with their stage presence. And there'll be people in there like us who have like a performing background already, but then there'll also be people who've never stood on a stage
that's
before.
Cool.
Yeah. And
then you do a graduation show at the Classic at the end. So your first show is like at a massive comedy club, and it's just like a really nice buzz. I went, like, if you think you can't write a joke, you can. You'll find out that you can.
Yeah. He has this amazing background of being like a university tutor and also a comedian, so it's like it's very well put together. He's not gonna let you get on stage and like do a shit job.
Really teaches you the core basics.
Yeah,
and he's kind of like, you know, Well, I've given you all the tools. If you don't use them, that's on you. But I have told you how to do a good job.
Now go.
He's like sort of branching out with more, like there's been some character workshops, there's been storytelling,
sketch writing,
emceeing one. We did like the advanced, so we've done like the 101 and then the advanced one.
Yeah.
Which had more emceeing
stuff.
Great.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That's brilliant. That's
awesome.
Now, looking at the Basement website.
Oh, yeah.
Emma, they have 26 different shows between tomorrow.
I said they had steroids.
Tomorrow and Christmas, 26 different shows. That is so cool. So a big shout out to the team at Basement. Now you can head to basementtheatre.co.nz, best place to find everything coming up and grab your tickets. We have literally a minute and a bit to go, so I'm going to throw it to you for the best infomercial to promote everything you've got coming up between you both. We're going to allow you 1 minute only, and your time starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hi, do you like comedy? Do you like women? Do you like queer people? Do you like just general performers after that?
Well, boy, do we have the shows for you. We've got next week, Femmes and Thems comedy, every night at 6:30 p.m. at the Basement Theatre. And then after that...
Well, from the 9th to the 11th at the Basement Theatre... At 6:30 p.m., we've got Improv Soup, Can't Think Straight, and Femmes and Thems Comedy.
And in between that, on the 6th of December at 6:30 p.m., you can see Choose Your Own Boxing Day Adventure. All the laughs you need between now and Christmas.
And where do we head to get the tickets?
Basement.co.nz.
Or iTicket.
iTicket.
And of course, every event is listed
on kickads.co.nz.
Yes,
we
did it.
I think these are the only guests I've ever had to turn mics down for, not up. Hey, thanks so much. We are out of time. Have a fabulous Christmas season with so much happening. We'll try and pop along to something in the next few weeks. Go well. Always love your energy. Keep coming back. And we'll look forward to seeing what 2026 brings for you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you. I'm getting in the Christmas spirit this week. Emma, I'm heading to Whangarei for Elf the Musical to kick it off. If you've got any shows this week?
I am going to the opening night of Tauranga Musical Theatre's Something Rotten. I can't wait. And then, of course, I've got the opening night of You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
Brilliant. If you've got something coming up, email us info@kickarts.org.nz. Have a fabulous week. We're playing out with Bic Runga's latest song, Paris in the Rain. Have a great week and make sure you
kick some arts.
to sleep. We'll be going.